The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
It is day 248 of the second Trump administration. And tonight, MSNBC is reporting that former FBI Director Jim Comey, on your screen right there, is expected to be indicted in the Eastern District of Virginia.
Now, to state the complete obvious, what we're all thinking, indicting the former director of the FBI in a transparent attempt to settle a political score is an absolutely brazen abuse of political power. It's also one that we kind of knew was coming. It doesn't make it any better, but we kind of knew it was coming. Because Trump has few political enemies he loathes more than James Comey.
President Trump's Justice Department is weighing potential charges against former FBI Director James Comey.
It isn't a surprise.
Three sources familiar with the matter.
No, it's not. Because Donald Trump ordered his attorney general to do this last week and fired a U.S. attorney because the U.S. attorney couldn't get evidence to go after his political enemies.
Two sources familiar with the situation tell MSNBC the case against Comey is far from strong.
Okay, now, those words, I mean, that is classic understatement. Far from strong. It's weak.
Widely interpreted as a call for the attorney general and DOJ to charge his political rivals.
Joe, one of the things that comes to my mind is the term selective prosecution. I think they are teeing up a motion for selective prosecution, which is a due process violation and a grounds for dismissal.
Well, again, everything's in the public here, right? There is no Watergate. There is no Iran-Contra. There is just Truth Social. This is what we're going to do. We're going to attack our political enemies. It's all right here.
This is a president who promised retribution, a president whose White House has said for those first months of his term, oh, no, we're not doing that. Well, we're seeing it kicking the gear.
Yeah.
They're kicking the gear, and whether it's direct orders, in this case it clearly was, or just a tone set by the White House, by the president, that he is seeing people. Well, he wants them to carry out his wishes. And even if this doesn't go anywhere, right, it's still for James Comey. It is expensive. It is exhausting. It is stressful.
I wonder if there's a legal defense fund out there for people like James Comey who are targeted by the president.
This is part of the idea. As you make some Trump as a private citizen with his litigation, his propensity for lawsuits, he knows he can outlast people. He can spend money. He can make their life miserable, even if his facts don't support him.
At this point, it's not even clear what Comey would be charged with. This looks on its face like a wildly blatant abuse of the justice system, certainly far exceeding anything that we have ever seen since Watergate, at least. So there you have it, right? The sitting president sort of ticking off an enemies list, directing his attorney general to ensure his political opponents are criminally. Now it appears Trump's new U.S. attorney, just on the job for a few days, has, like a magician pulling a coin from behind a kid's ear, magically found there is new evidence to bring those charges. Evidence that career prosecutors couldn't find.
Donald Trump's attempt to illegitimately use federal power, including federal prosecutorial power, literally knows no bounds in either direction. There's no rule too small for Donald Trump to break and no rule too big for Donald Trump to break.
The real point is a tried and true tactic of despots all over the country, all over the world, which is to just harass and intimidate their political opposition so that people decide to stay indoors. Protesters don't show up. Candidates don't run. That's how democracies die.
This isn't Nazi Germany. This isn't Mussolini's Italy. But it certainly sounds like we're moving toward, the president wants us to move towards, Orban's Hungary.
You know, all these things we could say, like, this is crazy. I can't believe it's happening. The president has said this was going to happen over and over and over.
I think that's an important point because my first reaction was, this is crazy. I can't believe this is happening. But I think what you're saying and getting to is, it's not just what the president wants. We know that what he wants is to reverse the order where he says, this person is guilty. We don't know of what yet. We'll find out. We'll figure it out if they don't like Trump. What is remarkable is yet again that the Republican Party is letting him do this.
With Trump so often, right, like the chaos is the point. So he can publicly name and publicly shame and point fingers and get on X and post whatever he wants. It's incredibly difficult for the average American to keep up with, okay, this guy's in, this guy's out, this guy's indicted, Comey, what did he do again, right? It all sort of collides together into this giant ball of chaos where what's happening is ultimately despicable. But the average American, I think, has a very difficult time even discerning what Trump is up to here.
And they're exhausted by it.
Completely tone deaf, all of them. I like how the last one there has a feel, she thinks, for the average American. I think the average American is saying it's about time. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. Lots and lots of new subjects and themes to get to on today's program. If you'd like to comment on the show, you can email us, td@thetrumpet.com. You know, I think we'll have to wait and see it when it happens, because we've been hearing about these kinds of things for quite some time. But just the fact that it's on, evidently it's on perjury. Really? He lied to Congress, and that's what really gets the DOJ worked up. It should be for treason, a treasonous plot to overthrow the government of the United States. I mean, just the fact that they're going after him, evidently, on perjury alone, it shows how sick America is. In another time, in another era, he would be charged for treason. You just go back and look at some of the facts that we now know and what's been revealed. We had it at thetrumpet.com back in May of 2018, my father's article, the classic article on saving America from the radical left temporarily. He said, Comey told Mr. Trump in private that he wasn't under investigation. Mr. Trump wanted Comey to relay that message to the public, but he wouldn't, because it was a lie. So Mr. Trump fired him. It's the president's right to receive a full briefing of all ongoing investigations. If corrupt agents can withhold vital intelligence from the president and even spy on him, what could they do to you? And that's the thing that President Trump kept saying when he was campaigning, you know, leading up to 2020. And then again, last year, if they can do this to me, I mean, all that, here they are going on and on about, well, it's lawfare's expensive, it's exhausting, it's stressful. Yeah, I think Donald Trump knows a thing or two about that. And by the way, Steve Bannon, you know, Peter Navarro, they went after Trump and Trump's people, and they put some of them in prison. They wanted to put Trump in prison for 700 years. Listen to Hannity last night on this topic, clip six.
Now it's about time the DOJ does take action against Comey. House Oversight Committee Chairman James Comer has come on this program many times pushing for Comey to be held accountable for his 2020 testimony. For example, take a look.
We've got to hold people accountable for wrongdoing. Brennan and Comey perjured themselves to Congress. They should be held accountable. The committees where they testified and lied to Congress, which you said is a felony, they need to have criminal referrals to the Pam Bondi Department of Justice, and we need to see some accountability.
We all have heard over and over, no one is above the law. And you know what, James Comey, you're not above the law either.
And here again, I don't want to minimize the significance of lying. I just talked the other day in Fundamentals of Theology, quoting from my father, who said that, you know, people who get into lying, for many of them, it often becomes a way of life. And for people like Jim Comey, it has been a way of life. Same with Brennan, same with Clapper, same obviously with Obama, with Biden, all those talking heads, same thing. It's a way of life. It's everywhere. But the fact that it's lying and not treason, think about if Comey did this during the presidency of George Washington or Abraham Lincoln, as I say, in another time, that he'd be before a firing squad. He lied to the incoming president of the United States. He leaked documents illegally to some guy so that it could make its way to the New York Times. He illegally spied on the president of the United States. He tried to frame, he orchestrated a coup trying to frame Donald Trump. Trying to frame Trump for treason. How many years did we hear about the Trump-Russia collusion? Trump wouldn't have won in 2016 were it not for Vladimir Putin. Who orchestrated that lie? Well, that would be the dear leader. And Jim Comey was his point man. Listen again to Hannity from last night. He's with Greg Jarrett here, clip 7.
You know, Hillary invented the Russia hoax, Sean, but it was Comey that drove the narrative to falsely incriminate Trump, knowing full well it was all a lie. And frankly, there were so many acts of corruption and deceptions and misfeasance. You need an elaborate flowchart to keep track of it all. But, you know, these reports indicate that this particular case focuses on whether Comey leaked highly classified information to a non-FBI friend who passed it on to the media. And when questioned by Congress, Comey allegedly lied about it repeatedly. And indeed, on more than one other occasion, he denied that he had ever been an anonymous source. But the evidence belies that claim. In fact, his own deputy director, Andrew McCabe, implicated Comey as complicit in leaks of sensitive information.
They lie as a way of life. And we've seen it. The spirit of lying and murder, as I've covered recently on the show, it's everywhere. Again, you could do a show every day on the sickness in Israel, head to toe. This is from a Trumpet article back in July of 2018, 7 years ago. We said the director of national intelligence, James Clapper, directed James Comey to brief the president-elect on some of the allegations in the Steele dossier, which was a lie, which was created by the Hillary campaign. Comey didn't tell Trump that Steele had been fired by the FBI. He didn't say the dossier was ultimately funded by the Clinton campaign. He didn't say he had relied on the dossier and personally signed an application to receive a secret court order to spy on Carter Page and the Trump campaign, even while knowing it was unverified gossip. He knew it was a lie. I mean, that is living or lying as a way of life. He just told the president-elect about some of the dossier's salacious content and said certain media outlets had the information and were looking for a news hook that would justify their publication of the political opposition research. You know, and I make this point in the article a little bit further on, but you can read about just the layer of, upon layer of lies in Raising the Ruins and what we confronted during our 6 years of litigation, fighting for Mystery of the Ages. And whether they were talking about Mystery of the Ages or Mr. Armstrong or the End Time Elijah prophecy, I mean, they changed their story constantly. They just kept lying. And a couple years later, they'd lie and it would contradict the previous lie. That's the way it is with lying as a way of life. That's why it's such a horrible sin. That's why you've got to guard against it, not let yourself go down that road. And if you're raising little children, I mean, that can be a challenge. The spirit of lying is so strong. But we have to feast on the truth, as we say so often on this show. The truth is what sets us free. Lying is so destructive. And really, the spirit behind all of this lying that we saw, whether it was attacking Herbert Armstrong or, in the case of our nation, attacking Donald Trump, the spirit behind it is the spirit of murder. You're trying to assassinate someone's character. Well, in Trump's case, they tried to assassinate him, literally. They tried to send him to prison for hundreds of years. And here are all of these talking heads sobbing over Jim Comey because he might be punished for lying. They want the flow of cases from the DOJ to go in just one direction. You've got to go after a conservative. The flow of the bullets are only going in one direction. A couple weeks ago, it's Charlie Kirk. Yesterday, it's the ICE facility. A radical left-winger raised by a radical left-wing mother. Just they hate conservatives. They hate ICE. They hate law enforcement. They hate family. They hate law. It's amazing that the radical left failed to install Hillary Clinton into power and complete its takeover. It's amazing. It's amazing that Donald Trump was elected. God had to intervene. That's another takeaway from all this recent history. Their grip on power was so strong. It is amazing that Hillary didn't go in 2016. And it's amazing that Trump came back from the dead politically to win last year. My father brings out that we at the Trumpet have seen this before. The United States is part of the physical descendants of Israel. God's church is spiritual Israel. So I get into some history there with Herbert Armstrong and when he died and what happened. Oh, the lies. The lies. We just handed out an article. I forget what year it was from the Trumpet. It was the early 2000s. This Laodicean minister, he was writing to Joseph Tkach in 1994 and exposing his lies, basically. You told me this, 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 and this, and you didn't do it. You obviously weren't loyal to Herbert Armstrong and his work, his ministry. And I'm reading this, and he says at one point, I'm just paraphrasing, but the Laodicean minister says, I woke up to the fact that you weren't loyal to Herbert Armstrong and his teachings. And I was reading that the other day thinking, you finally figured that out in 1994? That's embarrassing. It's embarrassing that so many of these longtime leaders in God's church, some of them went to Ambassador College the first year, 1947, and served under Mr. Armstrong, loyally, it would seem, happily, it seemed, for 35, 40 years. And then Mr. Armstrong dies, a man of sin, a liar, a man that was just spewing, lying wonders. He comes along and you just go right with him? You just follow along? You have to fight for the truth, as I keep saying in class. You have to fight for it. Or else you're just surrounded by people who lie as a way of life. Jim Comey's not the only one. I mean, there should be indictments just flying out of the DOJ. And no wonder President Trump's firing some of these U.S. attorneys. Let's take some action. Let's hold people to account. They lied to carry out a treasonous coup. And here the members of Congress, I mean, they're very offended by someone that would dare lie to a congressional committee. That's not God's way either. But let's look at the sins here. These people are guilty of treason. They got away with an attempted treasonous coup. And then they got their jobs over at MSNBC and CNN. Perfect. It's just perfect. Listen to this exchange from Fox Business, I believe, clip 8.
Obviously, there have been attacks against this president now for a decade going. And Maria, the American people really want to get to the bottom of this. If people did things wrong, they want them to be held to account. And what we see with James Comey is he has tried to say, well, this is what I said. He doesn't want to talk about what he knew or what he did, but it appears that there is a cover-up that several of them were involved in. And what we want to see is a justice for President Donald Trump and those held to account for what they have done to him.
Well, I mean, you lived it as well. You watched how they came up with all of these fantastic, you know, fantasies about Trump colluding with Russia and then leaked it to the press so that the press would take it and it would go viral, which is exactly what happened. Half the country may still have questions about whether or not there was collusion. So is the issue here just perjury or is there other criminality?
That is something we will know when we hear what the grand jury has to say. But Maria, bear in mind, the American people watched this play out.
Yeah.
They heard what President Trump had to say. They saw how DOJ was weaponized, how it was used against him, how other federal agencies were brought to bear against him, his family, people that supported him, people that were involved in the campaign, the amount of surveillance that was done, and what the American people have realized. Things that President Trump said were happening to him were actually taking place. Now, those that did this need to be held responsible.
It's actually much worse than what she's explaining there. Because, I mean, there's a direct connection to all of the politically motivated acts of violence, the assassination attempts, whether at an ICE facility or, you know, just a discussion going on a university campus. Or in the case of Donald Trump, twice last summer. Twice. A politically motivated assassination attempt. And then you bring this out and all those talking heads that are sobbing for Jim Comey. They start screaming. It's not. I mean, Jimmy Kimmel, he comes on and apologizes, but doesn't really apologize. Yeah, he's basically saying he was a conservative, the guy who shot Kirk. And he's proud to say that, Jimmy Kimmel. And now he gets his job back. He returns. I mean, as I said last week, the talking heads are more heartbroken over a not so funny comedian that loses his job for 5 days than they are about actual assassination. They're like Maria just said there, half the country may still have questions about whether or not there was collusion. Half the country still saying that Donald Trump is a Russian agent. This is how they justify violence. We'll get to that in a second. Well, actually, we wrote about it in 2019. Again, tomorrow's news today. January 2019 at the Trumpet. A specter is haunting the United States. The specter of political violence. As I say, tomorrow's news today. Many Americans sense that this has been one of the most combative, even violent political climates in living memory. We wrote this back in the middle of Donald Trump's first term. You remember how they reacted to that? People were fantasizing about blowing up the White House, about murdering Donald Trump. I mean, we've been hearing this kind of rhetoric for almost a decade. A decade. Vile. Hateful. Murderous commentary. Yeah, it gets a lot of play on TV. Half the country still have questions. One third blamed President Trump for the violence, while another third blamed Democrats in Congress. Almost two thirds thought the media was responsible for dividing the country. I mean, the political climate wasn't good in 2019. It's worse today. And now we're having actual assassinations happening every couple weeks. It quotes Hillary Clinton here from 2018, I think it was. You cannot be civil with a political party that wants to destroy what you stand for. And Obama, he's made similar statements. Eric Holder, all of them. Brennan, Comey, they all think the same way. You cannot be civil with conservatives. They're dangerous. You've got to confront them. You've got to fight them. We're at war. There's, you know, the talking heads are just fuming that Donald Trump would say, yeah, I hate my opponents. And here they are calling prominent Democrats calling for war openly. We're about to get it. We're about to get it. Ezekiel 5 says so. Listen to Hillary Clinton more recently. This is from the Morning Meltdown, clip 4.
I'm curious, though, what you think of the bigger picture of what's happening around free speech, whether it's the message we hear from Attorney General Pam Bondi or the head of the FCC, the president of the United States, the vice president of the United States, about going after explicitly people they view as political enemies mm-hmm. or opponents and silencing those voices. How dangerous do you view that moment to be?
I view it as very dangerous. It is right out of the authoritarian playbook, Willie. I mean, this is, you know, this is point 4 of the authoritarian playbook. Silence your opponents. Cripple the media that doesn't give you the slavish attention and agreement that you desire. Use the power of the government to go after corporations and individuals. Because yeah. What is happening is so contrary to the founding principles and values this country was built on. Yes. Why is the First Amendment the First Amendment?
Right.
You know, it's because the people who constructed the, you know, architecture of this incredible country of ours understood what it was like to live under absolute power, where you would be told what to say, what not to say, don't insult the king, don't, you know, do anything that will displease the king. And we, you know, we've got to stand against that. But that raises a larger question. I mean, we have, and I include myself, we have got to stop demonizing each other.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, I think most of that right now in our country's history is coming, you know, from the right.
Of course. Of course. We'll have another assassination attempt and then another one and then another one. And they'll still say the real problem here is it's coming from the right. What's it building toward? That's the bigger issue, the bigger question here. This article from 2019. An apparently growing number of Democrats believe they should unshackle themselves from human decency in their quest for power. For decades, leftists have been able to vote progressive policies into law at the ballot box. When the people and their congressional representatives have opposed those policies, they have used executive actions and Supreme Court rulings to push their agenda into law. But after being out of power for 2 years, again, this was written back in 2019, many leftists are turning to 1960s-style rioting and protesting. You see, you can predict it every time. They're out of power right now. They don't have a Democrat in the White House. They don't control Congress. They don't control the Supreme Court. And so what's Hillary out there saying? They're taking away our speech. We can't speak freely. So we've got to fight them. We've got to stand against them. 1/3 of Americans think a civil war is coming. Bible prophecy reveals that they are right. And then I think Andrew Miller wrote this. This is January 2019. It says, Hillary Clinton said that civility could resume again when Democrats are back in power. Well, of course. Look, we'll tone down the rhetoric and we'll be much more civil once we get power, once we get back in office. I mean, the lust for power, the spirit of murder, the web of lies. How much longer can this go on? It's like I said yesterday, I mean, our sins have separated us from God, Isaiah 59, verses 1 and 2. And then you read the whole chapter and you see what our world is like, and it is not a pretty picture. There's no justice. Blood is spilled in the streets. We don't know the way to peace. We can't make peace with one another. That's the truth. This article says the biggest threat from America's growing political divide is politically motivated violence. How's that for tomorrow's news today? Now we're seeing politically motivated violence. People who are justifying murder, even commentators justifying murder. It's pretty shocking to watch. Ezekiel 12, verse 19, it says here, "And say unto the people of the land, thus saith the Lord God of the inhabitants of Jerusalem and of the land of Israel, they shall eat their bread with carefulness and drink their water with astonishment, that her land may be desolate from all that that is therein, because of the violence of all them that dwell therein." Violence. It's going to lead to desolation. Civil war, verse 20. "And the cities that are inhabited shall be laid waste, and the land shall be desolate, and you shall know that I am the Lord." When it happens, just know that God told us this is the direction we're headed in. Here again, that's Ezekiel 12. Go back and read Ezekiel 5. It's very sobering. Very sobering. This 2019 article, "It's easy for Democrats to blame political violence on President Trump, and it's easy for Republicans to blame leftist agitators in the streets, but the root cause of political violence in America stretches back decades." I mean, it's in our history. But then, like I read last week, you see the way we're reacting now to assassinations, and it's not a good sign. My father says here, "Many Americans," this is from 2017, "many Americans are troubled by divisions and hatreds being expressed right now, but they need to be a lot more concerned than they are. The problems are going to get worse and worse until people get the message and they learn why these disasters are happening." God's trying to get our attention. I mean, even with the return of Donald Trump, as I was getting into yesterday, He's trying to get our attention. He's trying to show us that there's a sickness that's set in. It's head to toe. And it's growing. It's spreading. This attack on the ICE facility down in Dallas yesterday. The guy murdered a migrant, as it turns out. I think Jesse brings out, it's a miracle that no ICE agents were murdered. But that was the goal of this latest gunman, this latest assassin. Listen to clip one.
"The shooter committed suicide after the attack. The FBI says there was an ideological motive to the rampage. He scrawled messages on his bullets.
Early evidence that we've seen from rounds that were found near the suspected shooter contain messages that are anti-ICE in nature.
The sniper had anti-ICE carved into the shell casings, but the media says no one knows the motive. Maybe the gunman was a comedian."
You can't just assume by that, what was written on that shell casing, that that's necessarily his motivation. He could have been doing that to thinking it was funny, trying to put law enforcement on the wrong track.
"Well, ICE says it was a clear attack on ICE, and the director of the ICE facility doesn't think it's funny."
"The rhetoric has to stop. There are people out there who are seeing what is being placed online, and they're coming and they're doing acts of violence against ICE employees. So that's kind of all I have for today, is that it's just got to stop. It's dangerous. And people are losing their lives."
Just a month ago, the same exact ICE facility got bomb threats. And another Texas ICE facility just a few months ago was fired on by Trantifa. They baited agents and launched a sophisticated attack with military precision. We've seen riots outside of ICE buildings in L.A., Portland, and Illinois. Just yesterday, Antifa stormed an ICE facility in Oregon with homemade weapons. Do you see a pattern?
There is a pattern, and that's mentioned in the morning brief that we sent out today. This was at least the fourth threat or act of violence against border enforcement facilities in Texas this year, just this year. Last Friday in Chicago, over 100 rioters surrounded an ICE processing center, assaulting officers, threw tear gas canisters and slashed tires. Local police reportedly delayed response due to sanctuary policies. Why would they be stirred to violence, to committing acts of violence? Well, a lot of it's the propaganda that you hear coming from, you know, the really sophisticated news outlets that are just there to report the news. DHS reports that 1,000% surge in assaults on ICE officers since January. 1,000%. They're being whipped into an angry, murderous mob. Justifying murder. This is where we are. Listen again to Jesse Waters from last night, clip two.
It's like a dystopian sci-fi movie. Unmarked cars, people en masse, people quite literally disappearing, no due process, no rights, enough. It's ICE, unmask. What are you afraid of? What are you afraid of?
Last week, the governor signed a bill to force ICE agents to expose their faces to cameras and cartels. The man mandated masks to stop the spread of a virus, but wants to remove masks so we can't stop the spread of migrants. Some of these politicians deny ICE attacks are even happening. Johnny was in D.C. this summer. Watch.
Do you condemn the attacks on ICE agents?
What attacks on ICE agents?
But I also condemn ICE being masked, coming up in unmarked vehicles, terrorizing our communities, kidnapping people. I condemn that too. I condemn both.
Did you wear a mask in 2020?
Did I wear a mask in 2020 during the pandemic? Yeah.
Isn't that the same thing?
No.
You gotta protect yourself.
No, it's not the same thing.
Don't wear masks in our community. You're terrorizing women. Real men don't terrorize women.
Did you wear a mask in 2020?
Yeah, look, for health reasons, I'm not a cop. So, like, whatever cute gotcha you think you have there.
They're protecting themselves.
But look, do you know anyone who gets more threats than me? These ICE agents aren't getting more threats than me.
Jesse Waters probably gets a little more threats.
Well, Jesse Waters, not a real man.
These politicians have around-the-clock security, armed guards, drivers, a bubble around them so that people can't get close. What do these officers have? Nothing. They go home to their families in a residential neighborhood with no gates and an address in the White Pages. Politicians with protection are inciting violence against officers with none. You don't think the threats are real? Tom Homan's been forced out of his home.
I have a 24/7 security detail because of threats against me. I don't live with my family because I don't want them around danger as much as I can.
That's crazy. This is the United States of America. Mr. Hilliker in the morning brief. Democrats say they denounce violence, but it's impossible to decouple the attacks on ICE and border protection from the incessant reproach Democrat leaders have hurled at the Trump administration's efforts to curb illegal immigration. You heard it there in that segment. These are prominent, forget about the media. I mean, they amplify it, obviously. These are Democrats. These are politicians. They should take off their masks so that we know who they are. That way we can come after them. That's what they want. That's what they want. Cities and states declaring themselves sanctuaries, unwilling to cooperate with ICE. It says here, city leaders refusing to, these are all things that the Democrats are doing. City leaders refusing to send police to stop violence against ICE. California Governor Gavin Newsom demanding no masks on ICE agents. Chicago mayor calling jails and incarceration and law enforcement a sickness. How long does a society led by those kinds of individuals last? Deeply divided. That's the United States. Not every city has a mayor that deranged like Chicago. But there's a lot of prominent leaders who think this way, who are inciting violence. Isaiah 3, Isaiah 1, Ezekiel 5, Ezekiel 12. I think it's Ezekiel 6. Make a chain, for the land is full of bloody crimes and the city is full of violence. Well, the world is full of violence. The world is full of hatred. This article from Israel Hayom. Why did Bibi Netanyahu's plane take a detour en route to the UN? Now, we talked yesterday about the United Nations and President Trump's speech there on Tuesday. And I guess Bibi's giving another speech there as well. Here he's going to this organization on U.S. soil that supposedly is there to bring peace to the world. It's been an abysmal failure, as I covered on yesterday's show. But listen to this. It says, without official explanation, the Wing of Zion, that's Air Force One for Israel, appears to have taken a southern route across the Mediterranean Sea, making the trip longer by several hundred miles. This could be designed to avoid European countries' airspace over fear they might enforce the ICC arrest warrant against Netanyahu. So Bibi's got to he's got to be careful with his flight plan, because there's leaders in this world that want to attack him, that want to put him in prison, that want to persecute him. Just like there's plenty of leaders that want to do that with Donald Trump. We're at war. Spiritual warfare is real. And more preachers, as I've been saying, should be talking about it. They should be going to Ephesians 6. They should be reading Revelation 12 and verse 9. Listen to one more clip from Jesse Waters, clip 3.
Democrats have declared war. Not my words, theirs.
We're in a war right now to save this country, and so you have to be willing to do whatever is necessary in order to save the country.
Think about how they're programming people. They're at war, and they have to win by any means necessary. That ICE is the president's Nazi Gestapo, and if they don't push back, democracy's dead.
I fear that we will not have an election in 2028. I really mean that in the core of my soul, unless we wake up to the code red, what's happening in this country, and we wake up soberly to how serious this moment is.
Wow. I don't watch these shows. So you see the clips and you're just, is this going to a nighttime audience? Is this going out on a not so funny comedian show? I guess it is. Code red? No election in 2028? It wasn't enough to talk about the end of democracy in 2024 if Trump wins? That's, many would say the Democrats' best hope for president next time around. Newsom. It's pretty crazy to watch. I've been talking a lot about Erica Kirk since the memorial service Sunday. And she made some wonderful statements about family, about what her late husband thinks or thought about family. But you hear the statements and you also are reminded of just how sick the family is, how we've witnessed a total breakdown in family, just as Herbert Armstrong was talking about in the 1960s and 70s. And 1980s. What would he say today? This is Erica Kirk from the service on Sunday, clip 9.
His love for me drove me to be a better wife. Every day he honored me, and I prayed that I could be the wife that God needed me to be for my husband. Women, I have a challenge for you too. Be virtuous. Our strength is found in God's design for our role. We are the guardians. We are the encouragers. We are the preservers. Guard your heart. Everything you do flows from it. And if you're a mother, please recognize that is the single most important ministry you have.
I played the challenge that she gave to young men on yesterday's show. And there's her challenge for women. Here's your most important ministry, motherhood. Being a good mom. It is a ministry. We are teachers. And it starts with teaching ourselves, and then we teach one another. We teach our children. And we use the good book, don't we? We use the book. Every word in the book is inspired by God. You know what we need more of? Sam sent me a clip, some of the music that was at the memorial service. And again, I know these are sincere people. And we have music as part of our services where the congregation is singing from a hymn with songs that are straight from the scriptures. God loves good music. But you know what we need most of all? As long as we're in the midst of a religious revival, how about if we get right into the Gospels and see what Jesus Christ actually taught and read it chapter and verse and read long passages and then take the lessons that come out from that and live it and apply it. You, in other words, use the truth of God. God says, don't be a hearer only, but be a doer. Otherwise, you're deceiving yourself. How, I mean, it talks about God's design for the woman's role, the wife's role. Where do you get that law, that instruction, that teaching, that design? Well, it comes out of the Holy Scriptures. God gave us the instruction manual, the how-to book. Here you go. Use it. Listen again as she talks about her marriage to Charlie, clip 12 or 10, sorry.
My marriage with Charlie was the best thing that ever happened to me. And I know it was the best thing that ever happened to him as well. He wanted everyone to experience that joy. And that's what's so beautiful about God's design for marriage is that everyone can.
Everyone can. But most people don't. You look at marriage, you look at family, and what we see so much of in the world today is division and strife. Just like we're seeing politically, it's playing out politically, we're seeing it play out nationally, we're seeing it play out between nations. Nations saying to the democratically elected prime minister of Israel, if you fly over our space, we might just put you in prison. We might declare you guilty of a war crime. I mean, this is insanity. Bibi's one of the few strong leaders left in the world today. He's one of the few rising lions. He's confronting evil. It's right at his doorstep. How easy it is for the radicals half a world away to say, you know what? The solution to this is put Bibi in prison. Well, they're in New York saying that Hamas deserves a state. I guess this is the lesson that we take away from October 7. Give Hamas statehood, and let it be right alongside Israel. And if they destroy Israel, well, then so be it. If they assassinate Israel, well, sometimes it's justified. One more clip from Erica Kirk, number 11.
But Charlie's mission above all was aimed directly at those who aren't married. He named his organization well. He knew things were not right with America and especially with young people, and they needed a new direction. Charlie passionately wanted to reach and save the lost boys of the West. The young men who feel like they have no direction, no purpose, no faith, and no reason to live. the men wasting their lives on distractions, and the men consumed with resentment, anger, and hate. Charlie wanted to help them. He wanted them to have a home with Turning Point USA. And when he went onto campus, he was looking to show them a better path and a better life that was right there for the taking. He wanted to show them that. My husband, Charlie, he wanted to save young men just like the one who took his life.
Well, it was a religious movement in many ways, but you look at the revival, the so-called revival, and you look at the world, and you look at the nation, and you look at family, and you look at political divisions. What has religion done these past 5, 6, 7 decades to push back against this pendulum swing from the old morality to the new, as Herbert Armstrong wrote about back in the 1960s. God speaks out on the new morality. What does God say about it? Most Americans, this is from his book, 1964, most Americans hate to admit we are in a crisis, but its bitter fruits are all around us. The beatnik, the racist, the wild kid, the price rigging executive, the pregnant high school girl, the dope addict, the vandal, the bribed athlete, the uncared for aged, the poor, the criminal. Television depicts shoot 'em up violence as the American way, and the movies uphold stardom as a warrant for four husbands and a lover. This is, I mean, it's somewhat dated, but it's much worse today. Since we live in a society without a supreme moral authority, where can we get moral standards? Not from the church, says Dean Samuel Miller of the Harvard Divinity School. The church has become almost as monastic as the orders in the Middle Ages. There seems to be no connection between what happens in the church and what happens in society. And I've given you other articles, much more recent articles, that make that point. Why is Charlie Kirk seen by some as a prophet or an evangelist? I mean, even that shows how weak religion is. He wasn't a prophet, but they're looking to him as a martyr. Because there's no strength of leadership in the church. There seems to be no connection between what happens in the church and what happens in society. Mr. Armstrong says, listeners to the World Tomorrow radio program and readers of The Plain Truth have heard and read repeatedly that the Christianity of this day seems to have no connection with adherents' social, business, professional, or political lives. Nothing to do with how we live. I mean, the Christianity should be the first place that you turn to for instruction about how to live. Instead, you get some unusual couples like Charlie Kirk and his wife that actually did look into the book for the moral code, for the guide to organize or set up a marriage and family. But they're rare, those kinds of people. The sole mission of the church, as generally conceived, it seems, is or used to be merely to get people saved. To get them saved. But what about teaching them how to live? I mean, this is what God's true church is doing. And it's a beautiful thing. Every day, I know, I come at it every day in my classes. And I'm giving them instruction and I'm telling them, look, this is what you have to abide by. This is what you have to live by. And you're surrounded by pretty good examples. You get all of this wonderful God-inspired instruction. And you're at a perfect time in your life to get your marriage and your family organized God's way from the start. It's a small beginning to what everyone in this world will receive following the return of Jesus Christ to this earth as King of Kings and Lord of Lords. That's all we have time for on today's show, the fastest moving hour in broadcasting. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.